Your life is a reflection of choices you have made. If you want different results, make different choices. Who's heard that before?
Yeah.
And so what we see is I'm going to do a little sharing today about choices and how choices are affected by what we do, by what other people do, and how it leads. As I was preparing for, it's kind of funny because when we had to do the cockpit resource management, that was for anybody in the flying positions, it would always show that a crash was a whole series of events. Very, very rarely was it one single incident. It would be a whole series, and it would leave a chain, almost like a breadcrumb line, if you would. And they said at any point, if one of those links would have been broken, it would have prevented or stopped it. And I always thought to myself, well, that's a lot of times in life, that's the same way with the choices we make. If we have a series of these bad choices, one on top of another, if we can break that and crash that, we can start over again, get things changed around. We make our choices, and our choices make us. In other words, what we become is what we have chosen to do in a lot of areas. Now, that's not saying that somebody, you know, oh, I have cancer, I guess I chose to have that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying by how we live righteously, where we choose to be righteous, whether we choose to go the way of the world. So the question is, why do seemingly, and I use that very loosely, good people do bad things? And so as you look at this, the New Age doctrine, or what the world will tell you, is why do people do bad things? We always have to discover, why did somebody go out and do this? Why did he do these horrible things? And we try to justify what led up to it. Okay? And so, yeah, there's a lot of bad choices, but a lot of times we see wickedness involved in that. But I thought this was kind of interesting. Charles Colson came out and he said, generation of liberals in academia and government have accepted the view that if only the evils of society, that being poverty, unemployment, racism, were overcome, crime would disappear. Okay, and this is a very common thing now in academia that is passed around over and over and over again. When I was looking for research as I was putting this together, you wouldn't believe how many of them, and I've left most of them out, but it was one on top of another, how this is what's causing this and what's causing this. I'm like going, not so, but this is what's being passed around. So what it does is it kind of gives the people a pass. Well, if I'm in poverty, then it's okay for me to do this. It's my destiny. I belong there. Or if I'm a certain race, that I belong to do this, I should be able to do that. Healthy, rational people will not injure others. Okay? In other words, poverty is the cause of crime. Former Attorney General Ramsey Clark. We're seeing this now where global warming has entered into this. Okay? Well, global warming is the reason why ISIS and terrorism is taking place in the world. And I'm just like going, really? Yeah. I mean, we can go all the way back to, the beginning of our country where they were robbing our ships and taking our people hostage.
Yeah.
There was no SUVs back in those days, to the best of my knowledge. But this is where we come up with this, where these things now rationalize bad choices of what people have done. This one kind of made me laugh as well. Obviously, the number one contributing factor to crime of all kinds is high unemployment among young people. Okay, and I think to myself, that's Jimmy Carter. And it, obviously, and it's like these are all just cop-outs for people and choices that were bad choices that were made. So here's a little factoid, a little trivia thing that I pulled off, and we know it's coming from a very conservative webpage here because it's NewYorkTimes.com, and it says 15 trillion. We started the war on poverty in 1965, the year I was born. I'm 51 years old now. Okay, 51 years we have had a war on poverty. 13 by federal government, and the other $2 trillion basically was paid for the stores by the states. Clearly we've received very little bang for our buck. So if poverty was the issue and we seize everybody else's money, which is against the word, to go in and take people's possessions to give to somebody else, and we still end up in the same predicament. Now how can that be? How is that possible? And so that's where I look at it, and I'm like going, okay, choices people make. And so the choices lead up to where we are. They tried. So even if they say, okay, all right, you know what, from 1965, 50 plus years, we've tried this. It didn't work. Okay? Time to throw in the towel. And no, we need more. We need more money. You know, maybe a total of $30 million over the next course of the next, 10 years, that will fix it. And the poverty rate is higher now per capita than it was back in 1965. Now, how can that be? How is that possible? Okay. And if all this money is going in and the people now are supposedly not in poverty, crime is still rampant as well. So I like this one here. This is a conservative person from a tank, a conservative think tank. People commit crimes because they put their own interests above the interests, feelings, or lives of others. Like, one, that's a little more accurate now. Okay, now we're trying to get to the bottom of that. What is the choices that people are making? And the justification. I see it all over today, even with race relationships, that a particular race feels like something's owed to them, another race feels like, you know, right now I'm hearing all this stuff about white privilege, that I'm supposed to feel guilty because I'm white. You know, and the same way, when I was in the service, most of my friends were black, and we'd have conversations where we'd sit down and talk about things and be able to openly discuss things. And now things are going where it's more and more of a divide, and more divided. And one group thinks that this should be this way, and another group thinks it should be this way. And I'm like, well, and there's nothing in between. But what we look at is righteousness and the choices that we make to do that. So choices made, okay, is what leads to people's demise, not based on poverty status. For crying out loud, some of the people that started out with absolutely nothing became very successful. I think about that the guy on Fox News, Charles, what's his name?
Hammer?
No, he's a black guy.
Oh.
I can't remember the guy's name, but it was just as I came up with this. He was born to a single mother,
right,
and she worked her butt off. She was doing three
classes,
jobs.
Right?
She worked her butt off to keep him in school. He was in inner school to get him so that she could, very disciplined, very, you know, taken care of. And now he is one of the top people as far on Fox News for business, for investments. He's done extremely successful. Why? Because he made a whole series of good choices. When he was young, he'll tell you, I made bad choices. And my mom corrected me, and she drove me back to the right area. So what we're going to be looking at here to start with is in the days of Isaiah. We're going to reflect a couple of different stories together. The people of Isaiah, that Isaiah talked to, were not the poor folk. He wasn't going out to the, you know, the barrios or the slums and speaking to the people. Okay, so first of all, when we look at Isaiah and he ran into conflicts, they were not vagrants or unemployed. They were the leaders of the government, the priests. These were the people who were running the show, the authority, if you will. And they made a choice, and they chose to live evil lives. Okay, now why? As Isaiah goes against there, what's his benefit? Well, Yahweh's telling him, get out there and tell him, go say this. And he's going out there and telling these people who are very wealthy, they're doing evil, and they're making evil choices for a lot of people, and there's no poverty for them. These are the top guys. They have the wealth, they have everything. Let's flip over and we'll start off in Isaiah. Isaiah 59, 1 through 8 is where we're going to start. And that is going to be on page 703. Well, who would like to read the first couple?
I will.
One and two, go ahead. Everybody
Lo,
there?
The hand of Yahweh is not too short to save, neither is his ear too heavy to hear. But your
iniquities
have become separators betwixt you and your Elohim, and your sins have caused a hiding of face from you that he should not hear.
Who wants to read 3 and 4? Go ahead, Mel.
For your hands are defiled with blood, and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken falsehood, and your tongues muttered
perversity.
None sueth in righteousness, and none pleadeth in faithfulness. Men are trusting in confusion and speaking vanity,
conceiving
wickedness and bringing forth iniquity.
Hannah, you want to read 5 and 6?
Yep. Vipers' eggs do they hatch, spiders' threads do they weave. He that eateth of their eggs dieth, and that with is crushed bringeth forth an adder. Their thread shall not become a garment, neither shall they cover themselves with their fabrics.
Why don't you go ahead and read all the way through 8, honey?
Okay. Their fabrics are fabrics of iniquity. Yeah, the product of violence is in their hands. Their feet to mischief do run, and they speak to shed innocent blood. Their devices are devices of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their high roads. The way of well-being have they not known, and there is no justice in their tracks. Their paths have they made crooked for themselves. None who treadeth therein knoweth well-being.
Excellent. And so, yeah, when you hear that, you're going through there, and you're like going, holy cow. In 5, vipers' eggs do they hatch, spiders' threads do they weave. He that eateth their eggs dieth, and that which is crushed, being the shell of the egg, bringeth forth an adder, which is a viper. Okay, and so these are the rulers, these are the authority, these are not the people who are poor. Okay, there's no poverty-ridden crime based on this. This is crime and sin based because of bad choices. For whatever reason they're making the bad choices, they are. And it's the people in charge. So as I look at that, I think to myself, if all of it's coming from the robbery and all this is coming from the poverty, we look through history, even like in the last 20th century, and you see the people who caused the most damage were people who were in high places of authority. Okay, Mao Zedong, 50 million people of his own countrymen that he killed. Okay, to get what he wanted. He was the top 1%, fraction of 1% of his country. There was no shortage for him. Whatever he wanted, he had. Okay, Stalin, 20 million people.
His own people.
Yeah. What's his name here? Hess. Rudolf Hess. Hess. I just watched a show on him the other night. Okay, I kind of enjoy history, kind of morbid stuff with that, but World War II history is incredible. And I'm watching this, and they're talking about Hess, and Hess fought so hard, the inner knowing what he was doing. He ran Auschwitz. Okay, he fought so hard against what he was doing that he would go out on his horse and ride to get it out of it and clear his head so he could come back and kill more people. And I'm like going, fighting and choosing to do this all the way through, even through the Nuremberg trials. Never once confessed, never once said that he was sorry. Over and over again said, I did exactly what I wanted to do. I have no regrets whatsoever. And one of the families, it was a family of a mother with like 4 young kids, asked him on their way that they were going to the gas house. How can you do this to innocents? And he just turned around and looked the other way as they closed the door on him. And I think to myself, he was, anything he wanted, he had. And chose wickedness over and over and over again. And even when he realized how horrible it was what he was doing, he still chose it every time. And he cleared his head so he could come back and do it again. It was choice after choice. And now our modern guy here, everybody know who this guy is. That's George Soros. Okay? Billionaire. Multi-billionaire. Basically broke the Bank of England by buying up so much of the silver. Okay? That he, trying to wreak havoc and cause disruption, gives money to all kinds of organizations, and I think to myself, this is evil in high places. This has nothing to do with poverty. Okay? On the contrary, we give a pass to people to sin because of this, and what we see is the people that are in high places are causing major damage. The people do not only choose evil lifestyles, they ran towards them. And this is what we see again with Rudolf Hess. Came back every day, cleared his mind so he could do again what he wanted to do, what he said his entire life, that's what he's made for. And so I kind of thought this was funny. Anybody see any resemblance there? Darth Sidious. Yeah, just horrible, horrible, wicked man. Possibly one of the most wicked men of our time. Just a terrible, terrible guy. But this is what we see in the multi-millions, and instead of taking it and trying to do good, he's a philanthropist, or what I would call a full-on rapist. He is sending it out to do all these things to cause major, major problems within the world.
He's the one that did Ferguson, Missouri. He funded all the rioters.
Yep.
George Soros.
So he is nothing but a baiter, if you will. Somebody who comes in there to just stir up, wants the chaos. You know, I remember that in the movie Batman, that he was asking, well, we're trying to find out about this guy who was the Joker. Okay, the guy playing the Joker. Why does he want to do this? And they're trying to analyze why he wants to do this. Why is he doing all these things? And Michael Caine comes in there. I don't remember the name of his character, but he comes in there and tells him, he goes, some people just want to watch the world burn. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, there is no justification. He chose wicked. He is a son of the adversary. Okay, and that's it. Quit trying to justify it.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what he is. There is no justification for it. It's wicked choices. Let's go here. We're going to read the rest of this here, and I'll start off in 9 and read a few of them, and I'll ask some adults to help me out. In 9 there, the same chapter, "For this cause has justice removed far from us, and righteousness overtake us not." Take us not. "We wait for light, but lo, darkness. For brightness, in thick darkness we walk. We grope as blind men for a wall. Yea, as men without eyes do we grope. We have stumbled at broad noon as though it were twilight. In desolate places like the dead, we grow like the bears, all of us." We growl, I'm sorry. "And like doves do we mournfully coo. We wait for justice, and there is none. For salvation, it is far from us. For our transgressions have multiplied before thee, and our sins have witnessed against us. For our transgressions are with us, and as for our iniquities, we acknowledge them. Transgressing and denying Yahweh, and turning away from following our Elohim, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and muttering from the heart words of falsehood." Who can somebody help me out here in 14?
So then there hath been a driving back of justice, and righteousness afar off standeth. For truth has stumbled in the broad way, and right cannot enter. And the truth hath been found missing. And he that turneth away wrong is liable to be despoiled. And when Yahweh looked, then was it grievous in his eyes that there was no justice. When he saw that there was no mighty man, then was he astonished that there was none to interpose. His own arm brought him salvation. His own righteousness, the same, upheld him. And he put on righteousness as a coat of mail, and a helmet of victory upon his head. And he put on the garment of avenging for clothing, and wrapped about him a cloak, jealousy. According to their deeds, accordingly will he repay. Indignation to his adversaries, recompense to his enemies. To the coastlands recompense will he repay. And they may revere from the west the name of Yahweh, and from the rising of the sun his glory. And he will come in like a rushing stream, the breath of Yahweh driving it on. So shall come in the Zion, a Redeemer, for such as are turning from transgression in Jacob, declareth Yahweh. And as for me, this shall my covenant with him, saith Yahweh, my Ruah that is upon thee, and my words which I have put in thy mouth shall not be taken out of thy mouth, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, nor out of the mouth of the seed's seed, saith Yahweh, from henceforth, even unto times age abide.
Excellent. And so I think about that as we go through, and we basically read the entire chapter 59, and Isaiah coming and telling these people that you know, think about going to Stalin and telling him, you know, these words. You're like going, okay, I guess this will be the end, but you're telling me to go do this. I'll go do it. I'll go say this. And so this is where we look at, and we see that there is wickedness in high places and coming in from establishments. So when we look at this and we compare this to our daytime, because nothing's changed. It just cycles over and over and over again. How did we get to this? The series of bad choices that we've made. I look at it through the taking Yahweh out of the schools, the prayers out of things. We're limited. We can't say things. If somebody says things, now college campuses have say things where if you anything that's wholesome is, well, that puts me in a not safe place. And so, but anything else, you can have homosexuality, you can have any of the other junk thrown in there, and it's okay, but this we're going to limit. We're going to stop it. And so what we see is we see what used to be left is now right, what used to be black is white, and everything is reversing and turning on its head. And I'm like going, yeah, exactly right. This is exactly what we see. And it's because of the bad choices, conforming to the world. And so as we do this, even with the church and the believers, when we start conforming to the world and we start allowing the slow mitigation, if you will, of what the world sells us and how we're supposed to be, listening to the wrong people is one of the big things, as we see in here. And in 59:13 that we just read, transgressing and denying Yahweh. And this is where I see this applies to everything. And when we look at it, we're like going, okay, what's wrong with the local government? What's wrong with the state government? What's wrong with the federal government? What's wrong with the world? Transgressing and denying Yahweh and turning away from following our Elohim, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and muttering from the heart words of falsehood. Okay? Nothing's changed, nothing will change until Christ comes back and we have new rulership. Okay? This is going to be the same. So trying to explain why somebody's doing something or why is there evil in the world, it's because of this. This is why. This is the choices of people turning away. Let's flip over here to Proverbs. We are done here in this portion. Proverbs 1. 15 through 33, and I'll start reading this here. It's going to be on page 609. And so what you see here is the choices are as well, is we have to choose against what's right and what's not right. Because what the world will try to sell us as fact. Okay, and then not only if you don't accept it as fact, they'll separate you. They will cast you out or chastise you for not accepting what they're telling you. And so study after study that like psychologists have done, that they would do an example and they would put something in a class and they would have one or two kids that were basically known as leaders or people that the other kids looked up to. They would tell them that when you come out and they ask about this object, they tell those kids to say it was something different than it was. And everybody recognized what the objects were, but the other kids would hear them say it and they would say it so emphatically, like, you know, it's apples green and it's a red apple. And the other kids would be like, well, who sees a green apple? And the other kids would, you know, kind of do this, and they'd get into it. And then if you didn't, they would, well, why don't you see the green apple? Oh, I guess I do. And this is where it comes down to. It comes down to with the world. It comes down to with the propaganda that gets pushed down upon us that we have to, you better accept this. If you don't accept that, who are you? You're a joke. You know that everybody accepts this. Everybody believes that. And then you're like, oh, I don't. Why don't I? And it's being pushed onto you. So in verse 15 there, of Proverbs 1. I'll start reading this here. I'll go ahead and read the whole thing. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Withhold thy foot from their path. And that's exactly what I'm saying. Don't go down these lines. Don't get drugged down their path. For their feet to mischief do run, and haste to the shedding of blood. Surely in vain is spread the net in the sight of aught that hath wings. Yet they for their own blood lie in wait. They watch in secret for their own life. Such are the ways of everyone that graspeth with greed. The life of the owners thereof it taketh away. Wisdom in the open place soundeth forth. In the broad ways she raiseth her voice. At the head of the bustling streets she crieth aloud. At the opening of the gates of her city, her sayings she doth utter. How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And scoffers in scoffing delight them, and dullards hate knowledge. Okay, and that's where I say that, where we hear it today, where you can look at everywhere you turn, you can find examples of this, and all through history you can find examples of that. Whole countries get led astray on some kind of misinformation or propaganda, and everybody just follows in line. You know, they just goose step right behind them. In 23, will ye turn at my reproof? Lo, I will pour out to you my spirit. I will make known my words to you. 24, because I called and ye refused. I stretched out my hand and no one regarded. But ye dismayed all my counsel, and to my rebuke would not yield. I also at your calamity will laugh. I will mock when cometh your dread. And so it's kind of funny because what seems like you're at the end of the laughing stick, where you are the person being laughed at and being scorned, Yahweh saying, no, it will be the exact opposite. It will be them. It will be them. He who last laughed, okay, is going to have it. And that's what he's saying, to stand firm. I will mock them in 26b. I will mock when cometh your dread. In 27, when cometh a crashing as your dread, and your calamity as a storm wind overtaketh, when there come upon you distress and anguish, then will they call me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but shall not find me. In 29, because they hated knowledge, and the reverence of Yahweh did not choose. Okay? And this is it. These are the choices. Why did this happen? Because they did not choose Yahweh. Consented not to my counsel, disdained all my rebuke. In 31, therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, and their own counsels be filled. Basically, you made your bed, sleep in it. And 32, for the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the carelessness of dullards will destroy them. 33, whereas he hath hearkened unto me shall dwell safely, and be at rest within the dread of misfortune. Whoops, sorry, I read one too many there. Okay, that's it. Okay, that's it. So that's where we look at it, and the a lot of times what you'll see is you'll see the people who have not the knowledge taking and seizing control of the knowledge and pushing that down upon everybody else, or a consensus of that. Who we'll spend time with or who we take guidance from will influence our choices and the way we think and live. I think everybody can think about that, how when you're with a certain group of people in the past where all of a sudden you're saying things or you're doing things that you're like going, I wouldn't normally do this. And what's happening to me? Why am I doing that? Why am I... All of a sudden I'm like, oh boy, I don't like this. You know, that words coming out of your mouth or things or actions or things that you tell or say. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait a second. And that is, and it feeds upon itself. It absolutely does. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceiving yourselves. Evil communications corrupt gentle manners. Now, this is the Rotherham. Here's the King James version of this as well. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Okay? And so who you associate with is also a choice. And so you can be like, oh, I'm going to go down there and I can do this and I can do that with the, you know, so-and-so or this group, and I'll be fine. I'll be fine. And for maybe a short period of time, you might be. But after a while, you'll start seeing that it seeps in and it starts seeping in. And then before you realize it, what's taking place. And that's why I love that. Evil company corrupts good habits. It's a choice that you say, I'm separating myself from that. It's the same way when you're watching TV or a show or something. And you're like going, man, they're just pushing this right in my face. What are they trying to sell me? I'm not going to tolerate that anymore. I'm not going to do it. And click, there it goes. I'm done with that. Okay, and that's the same thing. It's a choice so that we don't let those things impede into us. If I spend time around evil people, I act like them, I speak like them, I begin to accept their standards of morals. And so you see that over and over in the Word where Yahweh would tell them, separate yourself from these people. Do not take on this group. Don't do this. And why? Because what will happen is it will infiltrate your beliefs. It will infiltrate the words that I'm telling you. My standards are a straight line, and if you take on this, it's going to move it and veer off. And before you know it, it's going to be a battle between this group with their standards and my group and my standards. Begin to believe what they believe. How did we come to be like this? And that's why I love in this. The viper's eggs, do they hatch? Spider's threads, do they weave? Like, what was that song there? I don't like spiders and snakes, but if that's what it takes to love you. I thought about that when I was reading that. I'm like, I don't know if that had anything to do with that. But I thought to myself, yeah, this is, somebody's willing to do that to get to this point. And I'm like, well, do it the exact opposite to have Yahweh's love, that we're not going to do this. Because this is pretty bold. This isn't the promise of the gold and the banquet where you're going to be seated at a banquet table. That's what the world tells you. Oh, look, this is going to be great. Look what you're going to have. You're going to have all these things. And then Yahweh tells you, no, it's more like this. This is what it actually is.
Yuck.
No one calls for justice, nor does any plead for truth. They trust in empty words and confusion and speak lies. They conceive evil and bring forth iniquity. And this is it. Why do they do that? Oh, because of the way they were raised? No, because people will choose evil. And it's a series of going up to this for whatever reason. People accept ideas of others based on false hope and promises, positions of authority and intellect. And I always love that, because the intellect, I'm like going, if you hear somebody, well, this guy's really, really smart. And then you hear him say the most boneheaded thing, and you're like going, yeah, you just destroyed that, okay? This is so simple. And yet they're going to go off and ramble about something, and you're like going, you know, you see one side over here where you have intelligence, but where it really counts, you have none. You have none. And you are steering people away from truth and righteousness with your intellect. And so I think about that. But how many times when you go up against somebody where you're going to go like, oh, you're going to go to debate this with so-and-so, oh my gosh, this guy's an expert in the field. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm a son of Yahweh. And Yahweh can make me an expert in his field. And I'll speak his words. Okay. We'll slowly migrate away from the tough truth. And I say that, the tough truth, because it seems tough at the time. It absolutely seems tough to go out there and speak the truth. You think about that. You go into a place and they ask you to, hey, we know you're a Christian. Why don't you come in here and tell us about this? And you get up there and you're like, oh, boy, I'm going to tell them and they're not going to like what I have to say.
Yeah.
They're just not going to like it. And that's tough truth. And it's the same way when it comes to, you know, raising kids or having somebody tell you something. Do you want the truth or do you want me just to tell you what you want to hear? Okay. Now, anybody out there will just say, just tell me what I want to hear. You're living in a folly. It's just fictitious. And so everybody's saying, ugh, tell me the truth. It may hurt. It might be bitter. But tell me the truth. Give it to me. That's the tough truth. It's really not tough, but at the time it seems extremely tough. Eventually they will not only accept, but defend empty words. And this is where I love it, where people will now, okay, we've all bought into this line of lies or this garbage. And now we're going to make you buy into it too. And now I'm actually convinced. No, really, I believe this. I believe it. And you can ask them a few questions and, you know, kind of hit simple principles. So you really believe that? Well, of course. Of course, you should too. You know, this is where it gets into it. And you're like going, now they're defending something that is completely indefensible. And by them doing it, it just shows their intellect is just teetering over, just dropping off. I love this here. This is Dan Rather's quote. I think you can be an honest person and lie about a number of things. That is a direct quote. Okay? Complete hypocrisy right there in this. And why? Because he was hook, line, and sinker into Bill Clinton's campaign. And so when Bill Clinton got busted for lying under oath about sex, no. You can still be an honest person and tell lies. And you're like going, tell me how that works. Yeah, that's kind of backwards. Okay, but this is it. This is where I say to people, no, we're going to sell you. No, he's okay. He's honest. He's still honest. You can tell lies and be honest. And this is where kids hear it and where people hear it. And now all of a sudden, you're telling, okay, the president's okay to lie and people are saying it's okay to lie. Where do I stand on that? What do I tell my kids? How do I raise them to be different so they don't do this? Not only tolerate, but defend the empty words. So I think about this with healthcare. You know, you can keep your plan, you can keep your doctor. And then as soon as it was evident that that was not true, what came out of that? Your plan was garbage. We did you a favor.
Yeah.
Okay? We did you a favor. It was junk. Well, that's not how it was sold to us. It doesn't matter. We're taking care of you. You don't know what you're doing. We know what's best for you. Unemployment. Okay? This is a big one right now. Lowest unemployment, 5.2% unemployment. Yet one-third of the population of the United States is not working. Okay? So you can say who's unemployed and who's not. I don't care what the percentage is. I care how many people in the country are not working versus how many are. That's the true facts. But yet you'll never hear that. You'll just say, well, unemployment's 5.2%. Lowest it's been in years. Well, you could have half the country not working, and if you don't count them in the unemployment count, then you still can have 5%. You can have whatever you want. This one was kind of a funny one here when I went through to this. Kim Jong-un, did you know that he got elected? He absolutely got elected. Okay? He got 100% of votes in North Korea. And I don't mean 100% of the people who voted. I mean 100% of the people voted, and 100% of the people voted for Kim Jong-un.
Surprise.
This guy's popular. This guy's really popular because what are the alternatives? Okay? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But you can show things like that. Well, this country loves him. No country's ever had such high election rates. What made me laugh is the people were forced to go vote. They were monitored. You go in there and vote, and I'd like to see the ballot card. I'm like, well, why? Why are we even going through this? So that we can show the world, look at what a great country we have. We're not repressive. Everybody loves me. They love me. And this is the lies that's being sold to people, and people buying into it. Let's flip over to John. The Gospel of John, chapter 8. All right, we're going to be on page 103, I believe. Yep, 103, I think. Maybe not. Let me find it here. Okay, it's actually on 102, I believe.
Yep, 102.
Okay. Yeah, chapter 8 starts on 101. So it's on page 102, 43 through 47. Who'd like to read the first two, 43 and 44?
I will.
Okay.
Wherefore is it that my speech ye do not understand? Because ye cannot hear my word. Ye are of your father, the adversary, and the covetings of your father ye choose to be doing. He was a murderer from the beginning, and in the truth he stood not, because truth is not in him. Whensoever he speaketh falsehood of his own, he speaketh, because false he is, and the father of it.
Cool. Who'd like to read the next two? Actually, the next three. Anybody?
I will.
Okay, go ahead.
Wait, no. Hannah was first.
Okay, Hannah, go ahead. Why don't you read the 44 or whatever. I think it's 45. 45 through 47.
Not for me, because the truth I speak. You do not believe in me. Which of you...
Convicteth
me of sin. If truth I speak, wherefore do ye not believe me? He that is God heareth the sayings of God. Therefore do ye not hear, because of God ye are not.
That's it. And so it's so simple. It's so simple. When we look at that, it's a great place to mark that you're from the adversary. Okay. This is what you do. When you're from the adversary, there's no truth in you. And you don't want to hear. And my words you're not going to have. That's really creepy. But this is just natural. It's like, okay, a lion comes from a lion. And so when you see a baby lion cub, you don't look and be like, going, I was expecting a gorilla. What the heck is this? And so this is the same way, where you're from the adversary. Well, guess what you're going to do? You are going to absolutely push for iniquity and cause confliction. And anything that you can do, your father is a murderer from the beginning. Okay, this is where people look at it, and that we have to associate people. Where are you with? There are some people that are going to be deceived, and they're just going to fall into that crowd just by convenience. They don't want to do the tough truth. Then there's going to be people who are just in that because they have chosen it. And by virtue of it, that's what we're looking for and watching for those things. I love this here. Is a pretty graphic picture. Why do a majority embrace falsehood rather than truth? Okay, why? Why is that? Because it's easier. It's easier to go down that road than to go upstream. You know, a salmon starts off upstream, and it's all downhill, all the way into the ocean, and then frolics, great time in the ocean, everything's great, and then the end of their course, they come back up, and you see these things where they're jumping up, and the bear trying to catch them, and I think to myself, they are swimming upstream, and it's so much easier to be going downstream, but Yahweh's calling us. No, don't go the way of the world. The way of the world is downstream. We're to fight against that and to do the tough truth. To protect their interests is why people will do this, okay? That they'll choose the falsehood. They'll choose the empty lies versus the truth to gain control over people around them, to cover their sins, prefer lies to truth because the truth tells something they don't want to hear. Okay, and so by virtue of that, when you tell somebody, well, it's not right for you to be doing this, well, who the hell are you? Okay, and this is what you get. And you're like, well, that's not what I want to hear. And the whole world is going, what are you talking about? I was reading a story about a couple where the woman waited. She's like 26 years old, waited to get to have sex until she got married. And everybody on her Facebook and everything else, you're foolish. This is crazy. You are making a huge mistake. This is what the world is telling her. And she comes back and she goes, I know what I'm doing and I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And so she took the tough stand, okay? And I'm like, well, good for you. Good for you to fight against that. Not to hear what they want to hear. The first and worst of all frauds is to cheat oneself. All sin is easy after that. That's Pearl Bailey. Okay? Saying that when you cheat yourself or lie to yourself, what you do is you pave the way in for the next thing. So it's the same way where the adversary will work within us to make that choice. You haven't done that in a long time. It's fine. It's just a little bit. It's not a big deal. Just do it. It's no big deal. Everybody's doing it. Just do it. Look at so-and-so over there. You admire him, and he does this, or she does this, and all of a sudden you go, okay, and now you just made an exception. You made a choice, and you do it justifiably, because the first one, you don't go out there, trust me, so people didn't go out there and murder somebody the first thing. This was a stair step to get up to this point, to where they get to this, where they've all these choices of justified, and that's the chain of events that I was talking about that led to people doing these things. Why did they do it? It wasn't because of poverty. It wasn't because of a race. It was because a whole series of choices that led up to it. The grass is always greener on the other side. OK, okay? And I always love that because I have been there so many times. Oh, my gosh. I just can't wait until we get back. You know, we'd be flying and we'd stop. And I can't wait until we get back on the airplane. I just can't stand this. This is horrible. It's hot down here. And we get back up in the airplane flying, and it'd be about 120 degrees in Thailand. And we'd be buffeting and bouncing around. Everybody on the airplane's throwing up. It just smelled lovely in there. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, not so good. It was much better where we had a little bit of fresh breeze. You know? But it's always that way where we look at it. And that's where we have to separate ourselves. Where you look at, oh man, I look to the future. It's going to be the light at the end of the tunnel. Here it comes. I'm going to have this. And then you get there and you're like going, man, things were so much better back when those days were going on. And you're always looking away from what you currently have. I'm like going, Yahweh wants to bless you now and to see everything that you have available for you. Let's go to Numbers here. Flip to Numbers 11.
Aaron, was that you who put that on Facebook about the grass is greener on the other side? And it was fake?
The artificial grass.
Yeah, it was fake.
The cows try to get over there and like, hey, wait a minute. This is tomfoolery.
What page?
Okay.
I'll play, cow.
Page 169.
Thank you. 169. Elijah, once everybody gets there, why don't you read the first three, and then somebody else can read the last three. Okay. 169, chapter 11, 1 through 6. Go ahead, 1 through 3 there.
And it came to pass that when the people were giving themselves up to murmuring, it was grievous in the ears of Yahweh. So Yahweh hearkened, and kindled was his anger. And the fire of Yahweh burned among them and consumed the uttermost part of the camp. Then did the people make outcry unto Moses, and Moses prayed unto Yahweh. And the fire sank down, so he called the name of that place
Taberah,
a burning, because there burned among them the fire of Yahweh.
Yeah, that's it. And so the premise of this is the people are murmuring. They're out. They have fled Egypt. They were in captivity in Egypt. They have fled it. They have been restored to Yahweh as his people. And they're in the desert, but they're murmuring. So who will read for me? Who wants to read? Melania, go ahead. Why don't you read the last three, 4 through 6, honey?
Moreover, the mixed multitude that was in their midst concealed not their lusting. And so even the sons of Israel fell away and wept and said, who will grant us to eat flesh? We remember the fish that we did eat in Egypt without money, the cucumbers and the watermelons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic, but now our soul is dried up. There is nothing at all unless unto the manna we turned our eyes.
That's it. And so I always laugh as I go through and read that, because in 4b there, the little thing that where it indents in, who will grant us to eat flesh? Okay, and so I kind of mock this, but at the same point, I think to myself, would I have been one of these people? I'm not saying that I might not have been. I'll try not to be, but I think to myself, who will grant us to eat flesh? We remember the fish that we didn't eat in Egypt without having to pay for it, because we were all sitting around the pool and the waiters were coming by and taking our orders. And the cucumbers and the watermelons and these huge fruit trays that were just coming around and you just grabbed what you wanted. And the leeks and the onions and the garlic and the shackles and the slaving and the making the bricks without hay and working 18 hours a day, but that's not mentioned in there.
So on the benches in the river.
Yeah, and you're like, what the heck is this? But I was like, oh, so much better there. And yeah, could you imagine how disgusting that would be to Yahweh? Really? I gave you their treasures. You saw the sea split, and you walked by, and you could look at the fish like a gigantic aquarium as you walked through on dry ground, and now you're worried that you're not eating watermelons? Are you kidding me? For crying out loud. And so I think to myself, this is it. And we're like going, okay, and so now what happened? Is this is kind of an interesting thing. Because remember, I told you that a few can steer. Remember in the word where it says that, the a little leaven can mess the whole batch. Okay, yeah. That's exactly it. And so when we see this mixed multitude, what the heck's a mixed multitude? Okay, here's mixed multitude. Okay, a collection. Rabble, collected multiples. Who's heard the word rabble before? It's not used very often. You probably hear what somebody saying, they're a rabble rouser. Okay, a rabble rouser. It's not used very much. It's kind of an old word that doesn't get used. But this is rabble. This is from the theological word study. Rabble, literally, lounger in the marketplace. I love that. It has common meaning of an unruly, lawless set who are ready to join a mob. Okay? This is what happened, and that's why it says even the sons of Israel did this. Because of a few that did this and murmured, it started and sparked a whole uprising of where people, everybody, yeah, you're right, you know, we did have it pretty good in Egypt, yeah. And everybody falls into this, and the next thing you know, you're like going, hey, wait a minute, that's where the tough truth, somebody come back in, hey, do you remember us being beaten, where we were worked to death, literally? What are you talking about? Okay, well, we don't want manna, you know, just crazy, but this is it. These are the choices, but the few people who led other people into those choices. The Israelites in that day made the same bad choices that Isaiah condemned in his day. First, they listened to the wrong people. They listened to the mixed multitude or the rabble, the rabble rousers. Began to embrace falsehood, the lie that life was better back in Egypt. They became rebellious and with ungrateful hearts. And this is the best thing. They were rebelling against Yahweh. That Yahweh freed them, the promise to do this, to get them out of there. And then they all wanted to go back. And that would be the same way where somebody's like going, ah, I was healed from this. Yes. But you know what? Life was so much better before I was healed. I really wish I had that again. You know, you're like, oh, no, no, no. Whenever they face danger, hunger, or thirst, they complain. Don't let the lies of this age deceive. In Jeremiah 17:9, deceitful is the heart above all things, and dangerously wayward, who can know it?
I'm not.
Become humble and let Yahweh search you. And we're going to finish here in Psalms 139. Okay, and that's going to be on page 601. And Hannah, you want to read the last two here for me once everybody gets there? Yeah. 23 and 24 of chapter 139.
Is it in the New Testament?
No, honey.
No, it's 601 in the old there. That's about there. It's at the top right corner of 601.
Yeah, right here. 23 and 24.
Search me, O God, and observe my heart. Try me and observe my cares, and see if there be any idle way in me, and lead me in a way age abiding.
And that's it. And that's where we do the self-cleansing. Thank you, honey. That's where we do the self-cleansing and our choice every day, instead of falling in line and becoming used to it. And you see how you do that, where if you fall away from the Word, or you quit reading the Word for a while, and all of a sudden, when you go back to it, you realize where you had been and how far you had slipped away from things, where all of a sudden you start realizing it and Yahweh's revealing it to you. And all of a sudden you're like going, I can't believe it. The way I feel, I can't believe it. How quickly I fell back into this predicament. And that is all. I'll go ahead and close here with the word. Yahweh, we thank you for the opportunity to go through your word. We thank you for blessing every person here. We thank you for the healing in the body of Christ for those people we've been interceding for everyone here. We just speak for the bodies to be healed from any ailments, any sickness, any virus, any brokenness, any torn ligaments, anything that we speak against these things, that we are the body, that this is well-pleasing unto you, that we are able to do these things. For it is not that we are taking from one pot to put into another. This is something that you're waiting to give. And so we come before you looking to give these things, the blessings and the benefits that you have laid before us. We thank you that we are daily making choices, that everything that is put before us is a choice, that we may make the right choice, and that we, as you have written, that we come before you and let you search us. Let us be sifted by you, Yahweh, that we may have the impurities searched and removed from us, that we may have these things identified and moved away, that we are aware of them, that we may be able to make new choices and break the chains of the slavery that this world has for us, but that you are calling us away from, so that we do not crave to go back to these things, that the chains are not there for welcomeness, but we are there to free those others that are also in bondage, and that we are to keep ourselves free of the bondage as well, that we speak the truth and the truth in your words, in your ways, in your precepts, and we thank you for this, that we speak boldly your words, and we come before you in Christ's name. Amen. My children, know that as I have added the task that you have done, that I've seen this, for I'm writing a long list of the things that you have written down, the things that you have done, that you are written in the book of life as you come before me. And of these things now that I call you to be diligent, that you can lay treasures ahead, that you can put things away that will be there for age abiding. And so of these things, it's a great harvest that I have waiting for you. A harvest that I tell you that if you come down this road, that there will be greatness, there will be many things and many opportunities and great treasures that I have laid before you. That of this walk that you do, that it may be laborious from time to time, that I'm with you, that I'm guiding with you, and I'm not putting you in these things to intentionally steer you away, but there will be stress within your lives. There will be times that you are pulled and torn and stressed. And I stand with you, but know that as an instrument, the strings have to be stressed in order for them to play. And I call this for you as well, that for me to play the melodies and the harmony that I have with you in the body of Christ, that there will be times that you will feel stressed, but know that I am with you and that I am guiding you and I am upbuilding you. And as you feel the stress, I am strengthening you and I am telling you to the actual greener pastures that I will lead you and I will bring you to. For it is my desire to see you well blessed and to be well rewarded as you follow my ordinances.
Amen. Amen.